friends, benders, and non-benders alike. Welcome to Braving the Elements, Nickelodeon's podcast about all things Avatarverse. I'm Janet Varney.
And I'm Dante Bosco. And today we're going to be talking to someone from another very beloved world. Multiple worlds, actually. Lots of crossover in the Avatar fandom with this other thing we're talking about.
That's right, buddy. But this person, who for some reason we're refusing to name, even though it's in the episode title, this person has also found himself playing, let me say it this way, playing a critical role behind the scenes of animation, working not just as a voice actor, but also as a voice director to make wonderful shows.
Wow.
Wow. Well, like, you're so clever for using the words critical role, Janet.
Well, instead of answering that, I'm going to welcome our very special guest this week, Sam Riegel. Welcome to the show, Sam. What's going on?
Hey, I'm so happy to be here. Thanks for having me, Janet. That was incredibly impressive.
Oh, I don't know. That's got to have been used 20 zillion
no,
to 20.
That's the really? First time. Yeah, no, that's it. That's the first one.
Really
Dante, nice try, but up your game for the next one.
Will do, will do.
Well, we are so excited to have you on the show because if there's one crossover, I would say like maybe Star Wars as well, but I feel like the consistency of crossover of fandom with Avatar fans that we meet at cons and them also loving Critical Role is like 99%. There's just a lot of love for both worlds in the hearts and minds of people who seem to love the Avatarverse. So it seemed like such a no-brainer to bring you in because we also have this great interest from our listeners and from fans of the Avatarverse about sort of all aspects of making great animation. And you sort of have a hand now in like almost every part of it. I mean, I'm not sure if you're like drawing individual cells or like sitting on a computer somewhere far away making pictures. But aside from that, I feel like you super have done everything else.
I've been very lucky to be part of making animation for many years now as a voice director or a casting director, sometimes as a voice actor like you guys. But now through Critical Role, also we make our own cartoon called The Legend of Vox Machina, on which I'm an executive producer and a writer. And I also direct some of the voices. And you're totally right. I've gotten to really sink my teeth into all things animation. And yeah, I think that our fan communities really do have a lot of overlap because weirdly, I feel like the Critical Role verse, the Critterverse and the Avatarverse.
The Critterverse.
They're very similar. I mean, like our show is possibly more adult, but it's not like yours is just for kids. Like it's very adult storytelling, very sophisticated and mature themes and stuff like that, even if it's not as much cursing as we do. But like, I think our stories and our show is sort of a slightly kid-friendly adult show. And yours is a very adult-friendly kids show or something. So they're both sort of in the liminal space in between. And they're both filled with great characters and amazing magics and such cool twists and turns. And of course, fans of one would be fans of the other. It makes total sense.
This is especially pleasing to me because, Dante, ask Sam and I how we know each other and how long we've known each other.
Yeah, Sam and Varney, how do you know each other? How long have you known each other? How did this get started? What's going on?
What a good question, Dante. You're really up in your game. we met, boy, I'll probably get the year wrong, but it was it the 2003 Sketchfest?
Nailed it. Nailed the year. Nailed
Amazing.
It all. Our
so that's
second
19
ever
years
festival.
Ago.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. That
Isn't
was
that
19
nuts?
Years ago, 2003? Oh no.
Yeah. I came in as a performer and Varney over here and her cohorts invited me and my sketch comedy partner, Rob Blatt, to come do our sketch comedy show at San Francisco. And man, it was so great. It was probably the highlight of our sketch comedy careers.
And love it.
And so many cool people were there. And we hung out with you guys. And I just remember we all hung out in a hotel room one night being all dorky and fun. And it was such a great time. And we've remained friends ever since. And I've gotten to work with Janet in the voiceover world a little bit. And certainly have watched from afar as you've become a mega star.
Okay. Hey. That was directed actually towards you, Dante.
Yes. So. What was the name of the sketch group, and where were y'all hailing from?
It's a great name.
We started as the Infinite Monkeys.
Okay.
But then we changed our name to Regal and Blatt because that seemed somehow even less appealing.
I love Infinite Monkeys. We've all heard the Infinite Monkeys typewriter make amazing stuff.
Sure, reference. But then we started to overthink it, and we were like, monkeys, it seems like a hacky comedy thing, and then there's only two of us, it doesn't make any sense, we're not infinite.
How many monkeys are there in the Infinite Monkeys? Two. Two Infinite Monkeys, half infinite each.
It didn't make sense to change your name to the Finite Monkeys, that also didn't really work.
No,
so.
Two Monkeys just seemed like a weird sequel to...
Two Monkeys is not a good time.
To seven Monkeys or 13 Monkeys or whatever that movie.
And were you guys coming out of LA or were you guys coming out of Chicago? Or
we came out of New York. We did Upright Citizens Brigade stuff in New York before there was even an Upright Citizens Brigade theater in LA. And after doing the sketch comedy and improv scene for a while, we came to LA to seek our fame and fortune as hot comedy writers.
Those Infinite Monkeys are coming to town. Watch out. Here come the Infinite Monkeys.
And the infinite possibilities.
Yes. Yes. It turns out there was only two possibilities. There was only two, and it was success or failure, and we failed.
Yeah, total failure, Donatello on Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Like,
for people out there that don't know, he's also Donatello on the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which happens to be actually, Sam, my favorite turtle.
Oh, mine too.
Yeah, there you go. How was life as a turtle? I mean, that's its own kind of, you know.
It was great.
Click.
I think it was one of my favorite roles I've ever played. Big fan since I was a kid. Always loved Donatello. He was my favorite. I actually, when I got cast in it, I won't bore the fans with boring behind-the-scenes stuff, but I got cast as Michelangelo.
Behind-the-scenes stuff. How dare you?
You got cast as Mikey originally?
Yeah, and the guy who ended up playing Michelangelo, he got cast as Don. And we recorded the pilot episode with those roles, and when they played it all back, they were like, it doesn't sound, it's just not right. Something's not right about it. And we thought we were for sure going to get fired and replaced because that's what happens in this business.
Yeah, terrifying.
But instead, someone was like, how about they just switch? And so we switched roles and it was like magic. It was a miracle. It was perfect.
That's
and
amazing.
I was so glad to play, to keep my job, but also so happy because I really did liked Donatello better than Michelangelo. It was a better fit. So
people love those stories. I love when I see movies and TV shows and like you find out the little trivia bit that like two people switched roles. I absolutely love that.
Oh, yeah.
There's a bunch of stuff that we could name. Another one that you were very well known for on the video game side is Phoenix Wright in the Ace Attorney video game series.
Yeah.
Don't mind if I do.
Yeah.
Love the name Phoenix.
Oh, my God. Is this show just you guys making me feel good?
Well, we actually have a surprise for you. Would the entire cast of that video game come out here, please?
Yeah, I got to play, and I still do occasionally. I feel like I just recorded him a few months ago. I get to play Phoenix Wright, who is an ace attorney for these weird video games and some anime shows that... that feature him. The thing about the video games is he only ever says like 10 things. So the recording sessions are very, very short. He just has to say objection, hold it, and like one or two other things. And that's
great
it.
Session.
Then I'm done. It takes
great
like 10
session.
Minutes.
Do you ever get to say your honor in an exasperated tone?
I should write that in on the
great.
Next one.
Great, great, great.
Yeah, no, it's been fun playing that role as well. And I can't wait to hear how you're going to make me feel good next, Janet.
Well, I'm going to pass the torch to Dante. I've had it with making you feel good.
I want to talk about the amazing Critical Role. I feel like you guys created a new genre of storytelling.
Agreed.
Of course, a lot
Your
of
Honor.
Fans out there have Critical Role. For people that don't know what Critical Role is, do you want to kind of explain the whole
Yeah,
feel free to talk about its inception as part of the the journey.
Yeah, so Critical Role is a live play, like role-playing game show that me and my friends play. We play Dungeons & Dragons on our Twitch channel every Thursday night at 7 p.m. twitch.tv/CorrectRoll. But the genesis of it was me and my voiceover actor friends all got together for somebody's birthday, for Liam O'Brien's birthday, and he wanted to do something weird and fun for his birthday. So he said, let's all get together and play D&D. And we just roped in some random voiceover friends and started to play. And many of us, like myself, had never played before. Had never played any role-playing game.
What?
I was not a very good nerd. But when we were finished playing, we thought that was it. And we would go about our merry ways and our merry lives. But then we all started texting each other saying, like, dude, that was really fun. Right. Can we do that again sometime? And it just became a thing that we would do sort of monthly at each other's houses, until one day Felicia Day, a super talented actor, performer, nerd queen, asked us to do it, if we could play our game live on her Twitch channel. And we said, no, that's a horrible idea, but we did it anyway. And we thought it would be horribly boring to watch random Joe Schmoes play make-em-ups for 4 hours,
yes,
unedited around a table. But we found that people really got into the stories and the characters, and they really enjoyed seeing a group of friends together at a table who truly were just trying to crack each other up and loving each other. And it turned into this thing where we have an amazing fan community like you guys do, and it has afforded us the opportunities to travel the world and meet a lot of fans and do other things like make comic books and board games and novels. And now we get to make, we take the characters and world of our story, and we've made this animated series. And
it's so phenomenal.
It's a wild thing that we never planned. But
the Infinite Monkeys never knew this was part of the infinite possibilities of what was going to happen in this town. But nonetheless, guess what, Infinite Monkeys? Things happen.
It's true. But we've had a blast, and it's so great to be able to go to work every week with my friends and just make up stuff together. It's great.
You are the perfect person for us to give as an example when we are doing panels at cons, and I'm sure you get asked this all the time too, and we'll talk more about kind of voiceover and all of that in a little bit. But, you know, so often when people ask about getting started in acting or performing, people today are both blessed with the internet and things like YouTube and Twitch and TikTok and all these places that you can be seen, but they're also intimidated by it because there's such a mass of stuff to see. But I think the answer for us remains the same, which is, like, it doesn't matter how many avenues or how much competition there is. Like, do stuff with your friends, find a group of people you love making stuff with, and you are the perfect example to say, look, these guys did it because they loved it, they love each other, all of that comes out in what you guys get to watch. And so it's such a great example to be able to give to people to say, you know, don't force it, don't, you know, just find it and enjoy it.
Yeah, we never set out to do this. We never set out to make a company or make a show or any of that stuff. We just set out to hang out with each other and do something that we were passionate about at the time, which was learning how to play role-playing games and learning how it all worked. And that's such great advice, Janet, just to anyone who's trying to be a creative in any part of the industry. Not everything that you do has to be geared towards, like, making money or getting an agent or getting a job. You should have passions also outside of that. And sometimes following those passions can lead you to unexpected places and infinite monkey possibilities. And you might end up where you wanted without even having tried to get there.
Well, first and foremost, I got to talk about Liam having a very ambitious idea of inviting friends over for his birthday to play Dungeons & Dragons. And some people that have not played it, you could have got roped into a 3-month game. It could have been a very long party.
I was blissfully ignorant about all of this.
Your first campaign could have been like, guess what? We're playing this for the next 2 years. Like, what? What are we doing? And two, you're talking about your friends, and Sam's friends just happened to be Laura Bailey, Travis Willingham, Ashley Johnson. Well, who else is? I mean, these are
We got Matt Mercer, Marisha Ray, Taliesin Chaffee.
I mean, these are his friends, you guys, that he just happens to go and play his first game of Dungeons & Dragons with. So that's also quite a bit of Infinite Monkey luck right there. That's pretty
good. It's true. And at the time when we started, this was like 8 or 9 years ago now, we were all just like you guys have been in the past, you know, work a day. Voice actors just trying to scrape out a living, doing anime dubbing or trying to get an agent and try to get a commercial job, radio commercial job, or just anything. So it's not like we all got together and said, like, these will be the greatest voice actors in history or anything. So we were just all like hungry young actors who were trying to make our way in the world today. And it worked out great. And we've all been another great thing about having you know, a group of friends going through this all together is that we've been able to support each other. It's not all easy, you know, you get setbacks and you get failures and mistakes that you make along the way, but it's so great to have a group of folks there to bail you out if you make a boo-boo or something. So yeah, more good advice for folks listening is to just have a few friends around that you can rely on when you make a mistake, which you definitely will in life.
For sure. Well, and that takes us to kind of to improv too, which is another thing that we often tell people is a great tool for if you're trying to get comfortable with yourself as a performer or as a voice actor, whatever the end goal is, being in an environment where, you know, there's structure to it, it's organized. And that's kind of, I think, like, people who didn't do any RPGs before, but who were performers and vice versa. And then obviously there's crossover between the two for people who, you know, like Patton Oswalt, who's like always been Patton and always been doing both and all of that. But that is another way that they sort of do like intermingle. And when you start doing an RPG, if you're a performer, you're like, oh, like, I get it. This is like structured improv with strategy and friends and laughs. And if you are an RPG player and you, you know, try performing, you're like, wait a minute, this is not dissimilar from the character I play in my Dungeons & Dragons game.
It's absolutely true. Yeah. Like, I think all of us were, some more than others, but many of us left that first game just shocked at how many itches playing this game scratched for us. Like, my desire to create a character, yes, check. My desire to do a funny voice, check. My desire to sort of to be a writer, check, because you're writing it as you go.
Sure.
My desire to be immersed in a long form story and the soap opera of it all, check. Like, all my creative desires were all sort of boiled and baked into one thing, combined with getting to see your friends do the same thing and passing around really unhealthy snacks and sodas while you do it. So it's so great.
I really want to believe that there's such a parallel between you starting to DM to being a dungeon master and voice directing. I want it to be like they were happening on the same, like on parallel tracks, because that I could even squeeze that together and make it fit. Like, oh, suddenly you're the one controlling the story in a whole new way. And shaping the overall story that's being told in the adventure, not unlike directing voice actors.
Ooh,
eh, Sam?
God, what a good segue if it were true. I don't know that it
Please.
Was, but
no.
But it was, yes. Let's just say yes and. But yeah, I have done a fair amount of voice directing since I got to LA. And that all mainly came about because I was started in LA doing a lot of voiceover dubbing, anime dubbing, which is slightly different from how we record original animation. The picture's already done, and for those listening, and then we take the Japanese or foreign language audio track and just sort of mute it and then replace it with an English audio track. But you have to match the lip flap and the lip movement. And it's part art because you're acting, but it's also kind of part math because you're just kind of counting how many times the lips move and making sure that your mouth is moving at the same speed and there's the same number of syllables and stuff. So me and Liam and other of our friends, Taliesin, were doing a lot of anime dubbing. And the folks who produced those figured the best people to direct other actors were the folks who helped write the episodes. And me and Liam and Taliesin and other folks were adapting a lot of these anime scripts for English acting. Hmm. And so it was just sort of a natural fit to have the people working on the scripts to direct the actors. And so I started doing that and I got better and better at it. One day I just sort of happened to be in the right place at the right time. And I was auditioning at Disney for something as an actor. And I did this stupid thing whenever I directed, since I was like in my 20s at the time, I wanted the actor to feel like I was in charge. So I wore a tie.
What?
Well, because I didn't think they were going to take me seriously. This 26-year-old kid, like, why would Gray Delisle listen to me? You know, why would
showed up to the session in a tie?
Yeah, so I would wear ties.
It's like Michael J. Fox movie in the 80s. That's what it feels like. It's like, if I wear a tie.
Yeah, exactly. And so I wore a tie to every directing session. And I went to Disney on a lunch break to audition for something. And they made fun of me. And they were like, why are you wearing a tie? And I was like, well, I have to direct a thing across town. And this is what I wear when I direct. And they were like, I think somebody else had like quit or been fired that day. But when I said the word directing, everyone in the room, their eyes lit up. And they were what? Like, wait a second, you're a voice director? And I was like, yeah, I am. And they were like, after your session today, can you come back and talk to us?
What?
And yeah. And I was like, sure, I can. And so I went and I finished my session and I came back and I met with them. And they were like, we are looking for someone actively right now who gets comedy. And we need someone. And are you available? And I was like, yeah, I'm available.
Oh my goodness.
So had you not been wearing the tie to then be teased audibly enough that you explained why you're wearing the tie, who knows? I'm sure you would have ended up doing it anyway. But that is an amazing story.
Yet another infinite monkey possibility going on.
How much do you regret telling Dante the name of the Scottish troop?
Infinitely. Infinite regret.
Correct answer. Well, let's talk about The Legend of Vox Machina, your animated series. How does that happen? How do you guys, like, it was suggested from the outside, because sometimes we don't really think that we can do a thing until someone goes, you know what, you should blah, blah, blah. Or was it something that you internally as a group started talking about, like, wait a minute, what if this was a cartoon?
I think it was mostly the latter, because our show, our Twitch show, is very much theater of the mind. It's basically like a really, really, really long radio play where Matt, our dungeon master, he describes what's happening with very visceral language. And it's all awesome. We do have a little music playing, but most of it is just sort of imagination games. And because of that, we've always sort of in our heads imagined how our stories would look like. And I think because we're all voiceover actors, the way that we imagine these stories is as cartoons. Like when I close my eyes and like, that's what I picture. Also, we are blessed and fortunate to have an amazing fan community who drew incredible pieces of fan art based on some of the scenes or moments from our games. And so we would have these just cinematic imaginations of what we are describing in our game. And we were always like, yes, that's it. I wish I could see this image animated. You know, I wish I could see it come to life. So I think in the back of our minds, we always dreamed that it would one day be an animated series. And we took it out and pitched it around town to everybody, all these places, and they all said no. And it was very sad. But then we remembered that we have this incredible fan community. And so we put up a Kickstarter to try to find enough money to finance a pilot episode. We figured if we could make one episode as sort of a proof of concept, we could get somebody to say yes to it. And our fans went crazy and they gave us way more money than we had asked for. And we ended up raising $11 million.
What?
$11.4 million, which was, I think, 18 times what we had asked for or something like that. And it was the It was the number one film and TV Kickstarter in history.
Yeah.
And it was life changing for many reasons. We didn't get to keep any of that money, by the way. I'm not Moneybags McGee over here. We spent it all on the animated series.
That's
and
so cool.
Wouldn't you know it, right after that happened, all the places that had said no to our animated series called us up and they were like,
hey, we want to do your show now.
We want to do your show. Yeah. Will you come back and pitch it to us again? Because there's clearly an audience. And so we did that and we pitched it around again. And Amazon said, we would love to have this on our platform, but also take the amazing gift that your fans gave you and put in our own money. And instead of making one season of it, we want to make more. So they said, let's make a second season also. And
great.
Let's make more episodes per season than you expected. And let's make the animation quality the best in the business and hire the best of the best animators and character designers and actors. And so it was an offer that we could not refuse. And
amazing.
We've now made an animated series that is... It's our dream come true, and it's truly a dream to work on every day.
Yeah, that's so good.
Yeah.
Avatar Braving the Elements is sponsored by Factor.
I think we have some weather bending going on. It's finally getting warm out.
Yeah, and I gotta say, whoever's controlling the temperature, I'm into it. You know, sun's shining, I'm ready to start feeling good for summer.
Well, you're in luck. Factor's no prep, no mess meals can help you fuel up for those sunnier days ahead.
Oh, trust me, my friend, they are already part of my health kick.
No kidding?
Big time. Right now, I'm all about their veggie vegan meals, but their wellness shots also really get me fired up.
In a good way?
You of all people know that's a yes.
Fair enough. But for anyone else out there looking to crush their wellness goals this May, Factor has loads of dietitian-approved meals with ingredients that you can trust, ready in as little as 2 minutes.
Head to factormeals.com/elements50 and use code elements50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month.
That's code elements50 at factormeals.com/elements50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next four boxes while your subscription is active.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Let's get into our own, just some lore and some chit chat from our own animated world, which again, if you like one show, I think there's a terribly good chance you will like the other if you are not already fans of both. We know that Critical Role members love Avatar because they have been very generous in social media, expressing that love of Avatar: The Last Airbender and Legend of Korra, which is so wonderful. But I understand that you also have a couple kiddos who are not hating on the Avatarverse either.
No, during the pandemic, it was one of the, I think it was one of the first things, you know, because everyone was going a little stir crazy there at the beginning. I think Avatar was one of the first series that they sat down and just watched start to finish, kind of like one episode per night until it was all through.
Wow.
And then I think they went back and watched through it all again,
mm-hmm.
which was, so thank you for that, because it helped me take care of them for a while and not have them go too bored or stir crazy. And then I forget when, but I mentioned to them, like, oh, by the way, you know, there's another series. There's this thing called Korra also. I don't know if you guys are interested in that. And they were like, what? There's more? And so they watched that over and over again. I have an 8-year-old and a 10-year-old, and my 8-year-old has watched the entire Korra series, I don't know, 8-10 times through or something.
That's so cool.
They're huge fans. This is probably the most exciting thing that I've ever done, is being on this podcast and getting to it. is getting talked to.
That feels really good. Have you ever had conversations with them? And I totally understand if like this hasn't happened, but are there conversations that you have with them where they're like, this is why we love the Avatarverse, or like, these are the characters that we keep coming back for over and over again? I don't know if that's something that you get into, or if they're just like, dude, we love this show, which is also fine.
I think they really like how complex it is. I know they're just kids and all, but like, that's also part of the rewatchability. Is I think that they like that the stories aren't all the same. It's not a formula every episode, and it's not, you always know at the end they're gonna end it with a silly joke. There's nothing like that. Like when they were watching it the first time, is that guy the bad guy? And they're like, well, yes, but not really. I mean, he can't really call him a bad guy because he's also now a good guy. And I'm like, okay. Well, are they an item? And they're like, no. I mean, they will be, but not yet. But no. It's very complicated, which I think they really like.
Complicated.
I love that so much. All right. Well, we'll get into some of our favorite questions to ask our guests. Okay. Dante, you want to dig in with some Animal Crossing?
You know how the animals in the Avatarverse are a lot of hybrid animals. So it seems that people have, us included, have gone drawn into our favorite hybrid animals. Do you remember any favorite hybrid animals in the Avatarverse?
Is Momo a hybrid of two things?
He is.
Yeah.
He's a hybrid of a
monkey,
lemur,
rabbit, a lemur.
A lemur and a bat.
Oh, it gets confusing because Momo was also modeled after one of the guy's cats. So then we get scared to throw cats in there as well. But yeah. And so he flies. He's like a flying lemur because he has a little kind of little like flying squirrel slash bat wings. But he's not an airbender. Whereas Appa, who's the air bison, he definitely is airbending. So he's magic in that way.
That's my son's favorite is Appa.
Good taste, your son.
Yeah, my 8-year-old, their favorite character is Korra.
Nice.
Yeah, obviously. But I was trying to think of good pairings, and I just think it would be cool to mash like some of the weirder looking animals together to make.
Like
if you took a blobfish and a platypus. And an anteater, maybe there's a three-way hybridization or something, but like I feel like either that's going to be horrifying, or what if all the ugliness sort of cancels itself out, and you have like an Adonis-looking creature, like the most beautiful-looking thing ever.
It could absolutely happen. Yeah, I definitely want to see the snout on that creature. I definitely want to see what comes through on the snout of that triple hybrid.
Totally.
That's amazing.
Yes. I believe the Shearshoe could be a triple hybrid too.
Yeah, the Shearshoe is a triple hybrid. Yeah.
Oh, nice.
I can't remember the three animals at this moment.
Sure. Poisonous tongue, you bet.
Yes.
It's definitely three, and that is one of the scariest animals.
Totally.
So
you talked about an item with your kids, so obviously your kids know about the ships. Are there ships in the Avatar universe that you ship?
I think they are very happy with Aang and Katara, because I was asking them before going on the show, on your show, I was like, why do you root for Aang so much? And they were like, come on, you got to. He's just the greatest. So, yeah, anything.
There you go, Katang, you guys out there. The Regal family ships the Katang hard.
Little shout out to Katang. Listen,
right.
I think what you need to do is tell them that Prince Zuko said he's very hurt that they don't ship Zutara, that they don't ship Zuko and Katara. Can you handle it, Dante?
It's a nice ship. You know what I was saying?
Nice
I love
ship.
People shipping our shows and your show too, Sam, because it's like the fans have that. They gain ownership of the show and they create their own storylines with the things that we've created or helped create. And it's really just feels good as the artist, like, oh wow, you guys are so into it that you've taken it to another level that's not even canon anymore, which I find amazing and I love it.
Yeah, no, you're totally right. When that's when the story sort of leaves your control and just sort of enters the world, and it's like, oh, this isn't my story anymore. It's our story. And it's such a great feeling.
For sure. You brought up Sam being at Disney and worrying about Greta Lyle taking you seriously. She plays one of our all-time favorite adversaries on the show, Azula. But Dante has mixed feelings about it because he adores Grey.
I love her. I hate Azula, but I love her. She's my sister.
So hard because Grey as a person is so wonderful and so hilarious.
Yes.
But she's just so good at being evil. She played the bad guy on our show, the first season of our show. And part of the reason that we cast her was her performance as Azula on your show.
Yeah.
Because she's so good. And you do, even on your show, you get little hints of like, oh, this person isn't just bad to the bone, like she was made to be bad, you know, from her traumas or her background or her father or whatever. And on our show too, like she plays a multidimensional villain. And I think that Grey is just so good at using her voice to make you care about a villain.
Yeah.
You know, like a lot.
She's a wicked wit and a wicked sense of humor.
It is amazing, though, that she can empty her voice, because she's so warm and so funny and lovely, that she can empty all of that out, tip it all out, so that there is just like this like cruel voice that's seemingly devoid of compassion is a real talent. Because I don't know, like you sort of go, how some of that's got to shine through. And you're right in that they're complex and she creates complex roles. But at the same time, you know, you're not seeing a lot of Grey in Azula, and that is, it's amazing. It's just amazing how much
she becomes another person. It's really cool. And then you hit stop on your recording session, and she just turns into a lovable weirdo again. Instantly. She's so fun to direct also, just because she has this thing. The best voice actors, I feel, are ones who like, could also be writers if they cared or wanted to, you know, or needed to.
Yeah.
But like she has that gift that a lot of great voice actors do, like you both, where you can just kind of look at a script and maybe you read the whole thing, maybe you didn't even read the whole thing, but you kind of like, you instantly get, okay, I get what this scene is about. I get what my character's role is, and I get what I'm supposed to be servicing. Like I'm not, like Grey will come in, and you guys will too, and instantly understand like, okay, I'm not the main character of this episode, but that's totally great. I know exactly what my function is.
Right.
I'm supposed to make the main character feel really, really bad so that at the end of the episode, they can feel really, really good. Or whatever, or I can be the support system for the main character. But you guys can get that after just reading just a couple of lines of dialogue. And I think that's one of the things that Grey does so well is like, you can show her one page of a script and she understands what the other 30 pages will be, probably.
Yeah. Oh, that's so well said. I love that. All right, Bosco.
I'm going to ask the big question, Varney. The big question we ask every guest that comes on this podcast is, of course,
I'm a Hufflepuff.
What kind of bender?
No, that's helpful. That's helpful. That's actually very helpful.
Yes. Well, what kind of bender in the Avatarverse would you be?
I've given this a lot of thought, and I also checked with my kids. There was a lot of, well, you wouldn't be this because, and you wouldn't be this because. Mm-hmm. So we eliminated fire very quickly.
I knew you would eliminate fire fast. I, by the way, had this whole conversation going so fast in my head as well. But I was really torn with the other three when I was thinking about you. Like, I was very torn.
I don't think I'm cool enough to be fire, Dante, honestly. And I don't think my kids think so either. I'm too dorky.
Don't worry, Dante. This is still a compliment to you. Don't even worry about it.
Where are we going, Sam? Where are we going with these elements?
My kids agreed that they thought that I would be an airbender because they said that I keep calm when things go wrong. They said that I'm always happy and smiley and joyful. And they said that I fart a lot.
Airbender, you guys. That's an airbender right there.
That is the best trilogy of reasons. That's the best triangle, triumvirate. I'm not sure what I mean, but I know that those are the best three reasons we've ever had.
I can move air and wind.
I had settled on air. I was close to water for you, but I settled on air. But I dismissed Earth, but I played with Earth because you're so funny and like very grounded as well. But I'm very smug right now. Oh my gosh. Sam Riegel, this has been so much fun. Thank you so much for coming and talking about your world and fandom and passions and all the good stuff, your kiddos and all of that on Braving the Elements.
So
this
amazing.
Has been so delightful.
I have to thank you and the popularity of Critical Role for bringing D&D back into the universe of the world, all the gamers out there. For me too, it got me playing D&D again with friends and campaigns.
Oh, yeah?
Of course, special shout out to my friends Laura Bailey and Travis Willingham, part of your crew. I went to my first Comic-Con with so many years ago in Australia before they were married, before they were parents. And I just have great memories of those guys. So, when this happened for them, I was just so delighted, and it was amazing.
Well, that's very nice, and thank you right back from me and from all of us. I really do think that Airbender and Korra really kind of like it established an audience for these kinds of stories that are complex and magical and rewarding, and these kinds of journeys that take unexpected twists and turns into fantasy spaces. And there's definitely characters on Critical Role, especially Keyleth from the first campaign, that are straight up based on Airbender stuff. So thank you guys for influencing us and being the spark that lit the flame. And thank you guys so much for talking to me for so long.
Oh man, this has been great. Where can people find you? Is there anything you want to mention that you haven't had a chance to yet?
If you are 17 or older, let's say, definitely check out our cartoon. It's an adult cartoon on Prime Video. It's called The Legend of Vox Machina. Season 1 is out, and season 2 is coming soon. And we broadcast every Thursday night at 7 p.m. on twitch.tv/Critical Role if you want to check out some role-playing games. And there's also comic books and novels and stuff at Barnes & Noble and other stores. And if you just want to check out our stuff by reading.
Love it. All right, everybody.
Thank you, Sam.
Thank you so much for listening to Avatar Braving the Elements. And hey, make sure to subscribe, follow, leave us a review. All of that really helps the podcast so much. And we love you guys. Next week, we're going to be recapping The Serpent's Pass with fellow podcasters Afia Augustine and Vincent Bernard. You can follow me on social media at The JV Club on Instagram and at Janet Varney on Twitter.
And I'm at Dante Bosco on both of those.
We'll see you next Tuesday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. Whether your pursuit involves a bachelor's, master's, or doctoral degree, GCU's learning environments are designed for supportive networking and collaboration. With over 330 academic programs, GCU provides a path to help you fulfill your dreams. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.